Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk some football as we do every day here with Bob, Dave, and more. If you guys have questions for the professor, text those in right now. Any football questions you've got, text them into 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
Well, we just played some sound from Tony Pauline, an analyst, and he was talking about Jadeveon Clowney and saying that he's talked to people in Clowney's camp or people around him saying he'd be just as happy with a one-year deal on a contender as he would with a three-year deal on an average team, and then said the two teams at the top of his list are the Cowboys and Saints, who don't appear to be in great salary cap space for him. So what do you make of all of that?
I mean, again, as bad as Clowney has been through this thing, it wouldn't be surprising to say that kind of stupidity. And again, Tony Pauline's been very good in reporting on the Clowney front. So it's like, if that's what he's saying, I mean, he is absolutely 100% clueless. I mean, the Dallas Cowboys right now have enough trouble trying to get Dak Prescott done. And think about the cap problems they have if they don't by July 15th. If they don't do it by July 15th, what happens is, to keep him, they have to put a 37.7 franchise tag on him. The cap is not going to go up, and it may go down. So you got 37.7 on that. Then you have two players, DeMarcus Lawrence and Amari Cooper, with $22 million cap numbers. Three offensive linemen with $10-plus million cap number, and then you have Ezekiel Elliott with 13. The numbers don't work. I mean, because if the cap doesn't go up, I mean, just one contract is going to destroy everything. I mean, they've got to find a way to get a low cap number next year on Prescott, or they're going to lose him. But if they go the franchise tag, they're going to have to break up that offensive line or break up the offense. I mean, more than likely what they would have to do is let the right tackle, the little Collins, go and then come back and, cut Amari Cooper. So it's like, that doesn't work. And then New Orleans is in worse shape. I mean, they have about, their entire linebacking core is up. Drew Brees, he's still there or may not be there. They've got big, their 2017 draft, which kind of put them over the top, their key guys are up. I mean, you got Marcus Lattimore, who's on the fifth-year option, but you got Alvin Kamara, he's up. You've got Melvin like Marcus Williams, he's up. So, they can't do anything. There's no cap room there. So it's like, if he's thinking those two teams are going to be in the mix, he's crazy.
Hey, John, we were talking about, my agent, Marvin Demoff, yeah, really well. And it was always, the relationship we had was, look, get me in a good situation. And then, he would sort of recommend as far as, dollars go. But tell us about Buss Cook. What kind of, because that's Clowney's agent. What kind of relationship do you think they have? What kind of agent is he?
He's a good one. I mean, he's Brett Favre's agent, and he's represented a lot of top players. I mean, he even has Myles Garrett. But in this one, again, he works for the client, and the client's dictating this one. And so, maybe in the end, because remember, I think it was December that Clowney fired Buss, and then he ended up rehiring him. But I think that this was all being controlled by Clowney, because, again, this, whatever the negotiation has been, has not been a Buss Cook type of relationship and a Buss Cook negotiation. So I put this all on Clowney.
John, how does the Jamal Adams situation end in New York? Adam Gase saying today that he wants Jamal Adams on the team, and yet there appears to be a little friction between the coach and the player.
Yeah, I mean, if Jamal goes ahead and follows the comment that he made about his relationship with Adam Gase, that could lead to the trade. Because, I mean, you go through and you see when Adam gets mad at a player, he ends up getting rid of him. It was Jay Ajayi. I mean, you can go through the whole list. Jarvis Landry. He's dumped so many players that he gets mad at because then he doesn't want to work with him anymore, and they get rid of him. And he's done that more than any coach in the league. And he's not as much as Bill O'Brien, but it's like he's done it in a bad way, and it messed up the Dolphins. Because remember, the Dolphins in his first year went to the playoffs with Ryan Tannehill, at least going most of the season at quarterback before getting injured. But, you look at this, and, if the relationship's going to get bad, it's not going to get any better. And if Jamal keeps on hitting the Adam Gase buttons, then there can be a trade. If not, Joe Douglas has just got to basically, keep him there and see how long the holdout's going to be, collect the $40,000 a day that he's going to have to be paid for the fine for being out, and then seeing if he's going to miss into the regular season.
John, again, you guys can text in your questions for John Clayton, 710-710, to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. People wanting to know if he's not going to sign in Seattle, talking about Clowney, and obviously you just made the case as to why New Orleans and Dallas would be a tough spot for him to land. If you were going to make that prediction, John, as to where he does land, what team would it be?
I think it's only two options. I think it's Tennessee and Cleveland. I think that's it. You know, it's like there's some thought that maybe he can go to Philadelphia, but then Philadelphia, I mean, because, you know, like, for example, you bring up, if Clowney did bring up the idea of New Orleans, I mean, New Orleans is like $25 million over the cap if the cap stays at 198.2, and Philadelphia is $61 million over. So it's like, all this would do would be take away all their cap room this year, because right now at this time they're stuck with $24 million and they haven't signed their draft choices yet. And, you know, one of the things that Howie Rosen, who's their general manager, is one of the best in football as far as negotiating the cap. You know, he's going to need to save as much as possible to roll it over into next year and let a lot of veterans go. But to add Clowney, I just don't see it happening, you know, unless it gets down to $10 million on a one-year deal or less. And, you know, and Tony bringing up the idea of a multi-year contract, that's never going to happen. I mean, once they got past the idea that Clowney's not going to get $22+ million, he was never going to do anything longer than 1 year, because let's say he comes in and he has a 13 sack season, then he can go ask for the $22 million.
All right, John, on Danny and Gallant this morning, they talked about the most improved position group for the Seahawks in the offseason. Danny chose the secondary, Paul chose tight ends. I went ahead and went with linebackers just to be different. But what do you think? D-line?
No, I think it's linebacker.
Line?
No, I think it's linebacker. Yeah, because, I mean, you think about
how about
the idea. Well, because, first off, it's like, you know, it overloads them at linebacker. I mean, here they were, because, you know, they like Cody Barton, but they were able to get Jordan Brooks, who may be able to beat out Cody Barton. And then, you know, Bruce Irvin, I know he's only going to be a part-time linebacker, but I think he's going to share time with K.J. Wright at the strong side. And so I think you look at that, and that's a good group. I mean, you're talking about, you know, you've added 52 sacks with Irvin, you know, because he's had 52 career sacks. And then you can see that even though nobody kind of knew about him in the first round, Brooks is basically, you know, the next Bobby Wagner. And so which is pretty hard to say, because, again, Bobby's that good. So I think that's the most improved group. Certainly, I think the trade that really sparks things up, as long as he's able to play, is Quentin Dunbar. And, you know, maybe people don't agree with me, but the offensive line, I think, is going to be better.
Why?
What do you think of that, Jim?
Well, why,
the professor agrees with me.
Yeah,
how about that?
Well, they've added five, okay? And so Damian Lewis, whether he starts the first game or not, looks like he has a chance to be a real good one, because he fits so well in this offense. As durable as you saw Jermaine Ifedi, he was ineffective. I mean, again, he was able to start for 4 years, so he wasn't a bust. But now what they do is they get a road grader in Brandon Shell, and Shell comes in and he'll help the run, and, you know, they can cover a little bit if necessary in the pass. But I think he maybe be a little bit of a better pass blocker than Ifedi. And then, they got Yapati back. That was encouraging. And they have options at a couple young guys. So I think the line's going to be better.
Okay, I heard you, Dave. I know the professor agreed with you. I went with tight ends, John, and I'm just wondering, you're great at this. You mm-hmm. speculate on numbers for people. Greg Olsen and Will Dissly, what kind of seasons do you think they're going to have receiving-wise?
Depending on how Dissly is with coming off his injury, you know, I think, you know, Olsen can catch 50 to 52, and Dissly, again, it depends on who gets more playing time, but I think he has the potential for 50 to 52. Now, I'm not saying there's going to be 100 pass catches to the tight ends, but, you know, whoever gets to play more is going to do well. But again, I still think there's going to be more two tight end sets.
Do you have another one, Jim?
No, that was my second one. I asked the professor why the offensive line was going to be better.
Oh, I didn't realize that was your official question. You guys can text in your official questions to 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. John, people want to know about Anthony Gordon versus Gardner Minshew. Who do you think steps up and ends up with a better career between those two Coug quarterbacks?
I think Minshew, but I feel bad for Minshew because I think he's going to get Josh Rosen in the sense that he'll put up a lot of decent numbers on a really bad team. Because, I mean, you look at that team and, you know, they went from 8 Pro Bowl guys on defense a couple years ago down to roughly 2, and one of them doesn't want to be there in Unique Ndakwe. I think they didn't do anything to improve their offensive line. They spent a lot of money in free agents that really haven't worked out, and they're just a bad team. I mean, right now the argument is who's going to get Trevor Lawrence as the first pick in next year's draft? Is it going to be Jacksonville or Washington? But those are the two teams most mentioned. So I feel bad for Minshew because, you know, he'll put up good numbers because he's going to be trailing in so many of the games because of the defense.
All right, John, Josh Gordon after his fifth NFL suspension. They're waiting to see the reinstatement. Any predictions on him? Are you hearing anything about what you think when he'll be able to start playing, or what, you know, the Seahawks? I mean, we talked about it. Mm-hmm. Look, you can't really count on him, but I mean, it sure would be nice if he was there for all 16 games. But it doesn't. You know, certainly history has not been on his side as far as that goes.
Well, Jeremy Fowler from ESPN caught me a little bit off guard because I don't know the complete answer to this, but he put out that the PED suspension is 6 games. And, of course, as you know, because you double-checked, you know, you count the playoff games in the suspension. So the 4-game suspension for the substance counted, but the 2 for the PED, you know, that's 6, so he has 2 more to serve, if that's true. But I can't validate right now if that's true. But, again, you know, he doesn't go before the commissioner on the PED. He goes there for the substance. And, you know, as Jeremy, you know, accurately reported, one of the problems that they're having right now with Josh Gordon is that they can't get any drug tests. And it's hard to get a drug test. And normally you're supposed to get 3 per month. And actually, is it 3 per week? Yeah, 3. So whatever it is, they can't get the drug test because, again, because of the virus and everything else and finding people to be able to do it. So in the next 30 days, you know, somehow, some way, he's got to get some drug tests. And I'm sure he's going to pass the drug test. He's not going to fail the drug test. And once that happens, then I think they reinstate him. I mean, you know, he does have again, there's no excuse for, you know, what he did as far as, you know, getting suspended. But there's a reason for it, and the reason for it was the death of his brother in November. And so I think that would be taken under consideration. But the big thing is it's a kind of if he tests negative, then he's fine. If he tests positive, then he's not going to be fine.
All right, John, did you see NFL.com? Bucky Brooks has the lead story today. Did you happen to see that?
I didn't see it, no.
He thinks that Antonio Brown, that the Seahawks should go after him, and he lists 3 reasons why. You ready, Professor? Here
okay.
They go. Reason number
over
one.
3. Go ahead.
Reason number one, Antonio Brown would thrive in the Seahawks culture. Reason number 2, the passing game could go from good to great in Seattle with Antonio Brown. And here's one I thought was kind of interesting, John. Antonio Brown's sandlot game meshes with Russell Wilson's improvisational playing style. So does any of that make you change your mind on Antonio Brown being a good fit in Seattle?
No, because you don't know how many games he's going to be able to play. I mean, it's one thing to be able to go out there and play street ball and, you know, come up with decent plays. But, you know, if you're suspended 4 or more games, how much does that really help you? I mean, again, the availability is one of the most important things, and his availability is going to be in question. And so then the other problem is, okay, sure, he can play street ball, but is he going to play selfish street ball? Because, you know, he's going to be the third receiver on this team. I mean, you know, or unless he, you know, go beats up Tyler Lockett or tries to beat up DK Metcalf, and he does that, he gets beat up himself because Metcalf is such a monster. But, you know, I just think it's too much. And, if he doesn't get his 8 to 9 targets a game, I don't know how he's going to handle it.
I think you were talking about Percy Harvin there for a second.
That would be correct, yeah.
beating up other receivers.
I mean, can you imagine that somebody would beat up a fellow teammate wide receiver on the eve of the Super Bowl? I mean, it's hard to think, but it's like, you know, do you think that Antonio Brown, who beat up a moving van guy, if he doesn't get his balls, I mean, then he's going to take the, take it to the next level and maybe take out one of the wide receivers.
Yeah, he's got a lot to clear up off the field.
Yeah.
So I don't anticipate we're going to see him anytime soon. Hey, I saw that Adrian Peterson saying he's looking to play four more years in the NFL. He's looking to, you know, be the Frank Gore of the NFL just in terms of longevity. How realistic is that?
I don't see it being realistic at all. And because, and it's unfortunate because, again, he's one of the most incredibly gifted athletes at running back I've ever seen. I mean, you saw him in college and he looked like a Hall of Fame running back. And so, and all he's done is come out and prove that. But to think he can go, you know, more than like a year or two. But here's where the problem's going to be. You know, next year, because of the fact that the cap is either going to go down or stay about the same, you're going to see a lot of the guys in their 30s not back because it's just going to be tighter to try to get these guys in. And say what you want, as great as he is, and he's been great, he's in that middle class. Because even the middle class guys making the minimum, you know, struggle to, you know, at least get contracts and all that stuff. So, unfortunately, this could be his last year. I hope not. You know, there was the thinking that Frank Gore was going to not be able to get a job this year, but he did with the Jets. But Peterson's amazing, and I guess maybe the one thing that could help is that you have like 14 starting running backs who are going to be up next year, including 10 from the 2017 class.
All right, John, your pal, Stinky, Chris Jones, with the stinky gloves, I believe, on the sidelines. You could smell them from where you were standing. But sounds like they are in a stalemate with the Chiefs. How do you think that's going to go? Guy's really talented.
Oh, he's good.
Saw an interview of him, and he's just a great guy, good teammate, really impressed by this guy. But what do you think ends up happening there?
I'm concerned about this one because it's the same thing that I mentioned when we're talking about Dak Prescott. Okay, so now, how many $20 million guys can you have, particularly now when they have to see if they're going to pay a $40 million quarterback? Because Patrick Mahomes, they have to start negotiating with him and get a long-term deal with him. So now you have, if they do a deal with Mahomes, you know, that's $40 million. Then you have $20.8 million in Frank Clark, and, you know, there's no way that Chris Jones can take a deal under 20.5 because DeForest Buckner, who may be a little bit better than him, but not much, got the $20.5 million a year from the Indianapolis Colts. So those numbers just go. So it's like, okay, you know, if you're going to be, you know, Brett Veach, the general manager, you've got to find a way, you know, trying to keep, you know, a team that has a chance to be, you know, a long run at the Super Bowl together and try to, you know, do that. And they may not be able to do it. I mean, that's why there are going to be rumblings that for cap-wise, they may have to trade him. And that's what you saw that happen with Buckner because, you know, I still think the 49ers made the mistake in that, even though Kinlaw just ended up getting, you know, a straight trade on the Buckner thing and he got his deal today as a first-round pick. But what I look at is that's going to be a hard one to be able to have, you know, three players making more than – well, actually, you can almost say it's four players making $20 million a year because you've got two on the defensive line making 20, and then you have, you know, two 20s going to Patrick Mahomes.
John, with the Chiefs, who's going to give them the best run in the AFC West, the Broncos, Raiders, or Chargers?
I could be wrong, but I think it's going to be the Broncos because, and again, it was funny. I was asked that on a Vegas radio station today, you know, because they're pretty close on Denver, Chargers, even though the Chargers had a bad year, and the Raiders. And the Raiders, I still think, are a year away from being a playoff team, but still could win seven this year. But I just like Denver a little bit better. They've had slightly better offseason than the other three teams. You know, they get you know, Jerry Jeudy and another wide receiver, Hamler, who comes in. Their first two picks are wide receiver. They're able to get Melvin Gordon. You know, they made two steals in trades. You know, they put in a fifth-round pick to get, you know, A.J. Boye at cornerback, and then a seventh-round pick to get you know, three-time Pro Bowler, or no, five-time Pro Bowler, Jarrell Casey. And so I think they've done really well. So they're better on defense. You know, Bradley Chubb's coming back from his knee injury, so he's going to be out there. So I like that team a lot. But, you know, I still think there's a decent gap between the Chiefs and the other three teams.
John, I was reading this story about it says a group of predominantly African-American business owners and community leaders has proposed to the NFL that it bring a franchise back to Oakland and they become the first black ownership group in the league's history, which I think is obviously something that could be great. But what's the reality of Oakland getting another team? They'd have the same issues with a garbage stadium and everything out there.
Yeah, none. I mean, there's no chance whatsoever. I wish that this group were in another city that would be legitimate, but maybe to buy a team. But one, the league's not expanding. There's no plan to expand in the National Football League for the longest period of time. They like 32 teams. And so the only way that you can have a move is going to be a team that's not happy with their lease or anything like that. And there's no team like that right now. I mean, the Chargers would have been one of those teams had they not moved out of San Diego. But no, they're in Los Angeles. I mean, you've got St. Louis. You know, they don't have anything because they lost the Rams to L.A. And so, you know, with no movement, there's no deal. And then to make further problems, it's like, you know, Libby, the mayor down in Oakland, you know, she, as long as she's in charge, she's not building anything for any football team. I mean, she completely refused to do it, and they lost the Raiders. So it's, I think, great intention. But again, if this ownership group, you have to find another city that has a team to find a way you can buy into the team.
All right, fourth AFC West question for you, John. The Chargers, maybe one of the bigger disappointments last year, but a lot of it was because of injuries, right, yeah, with Derwin James. Do you think pretty good draft? Justin Herbert, we'll see how he does. And then Kenneth Murray was the linebacker. They got two first-round picks there. Derwin James, healthy. What do you think about the Chargers as far as a bounce-back year?
Well, I thought so well of them that I ended up doing a Washington Post story talking to Tom Telesco of how he sat in his office in January and kind of envisioned what he could get. And even though it wasn't exactly what he thought, it turned out to be pretty much what he thought it could be. He thought he could get Justin Herbert without trading for him. You know, he needed two offensive linemen, and so he was able to get Brian Bulaga and then traded for three-time Pro Bowler Trey Turner. So that worked out. I mean, the deal that he made for Patrick Murray, I compare to the deal that Pittsburgh made last year trading up for Devin Bush, because, you know, you get a playmaking 240-pound linebacker who's going to be really good, and then, you know, they get Chris Harris at the cornerback position. So I like what they've done. Now we'll see how Austin Ekeler is going to be as the replacement for Melvin Gordon. He did some good things last year and then got a 4-year contract extension, and so he can have to hold up. But you know, the question is going to be, how long do you go with Tyrod Taylor? When do you put in Justin Herbert? But I like what they've done.
John, when do you think the Seahawks are going to sign a veteran defensive tackle?
Sometime right before the start of camp. I mean, I think everything's on hold right now before the start of camp. And, they'll definitely have to do something. Again, you know, you've got Damon Snacks Harrison. You've got Marcel Darius. You've got Mike Daniels. And then you also have Tim Jernigan. I think those are the four main guys that are there. And then we'll see if anybody gets cut that may be a candidate. But they'll definitely have to do something.
John, you doing your show tomorrow?
Yes, from 8 to 9, taking your phone calls.
Taking phone calls with the professor tomorrow from 8 to 9. Give him a call. John, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. Well, Dave's got a special story time today in honor of our buddy Steve Rabel's last day at Cairo 7. That is coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
I brought you a special present.
What is it?
Open it up.
As I was limping over there to beat him. Now, if you grab the guy's face mask and twist his head, then like I tried to do to Terry Obie that cut me into the mud, that is something that's different, and that's a penalty.
I'm not sure if we're going to be talking about any beatings in this as this story time revolves around Steve Rabel, but maybe he's got a temper we're not aware of. And Dave Wyman, we look forward to this segment every week, Story Time with Dave Wyman, a special edition in honor of the retiring Steve Rabel from Cairo 7, not from the Seahawks broadcast, from his news anchor duties.
Yeah, exactly. And everybody, I mean, Rabel's an institution here in Seattle. But, it's funny you mentioned the passion or anything like that. I think it was in Cleveland last year. And did C.J. Procise fumble in that game, or was it Rashad Penny? I'm trying to think. It would have been more fitting if it was C.J.
I can't remember.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah. And you know, and we were getting kind of irritated because the Browns fans were turning around, and I was more irritated than Rabel was. He doesn't pay attention to the fans, but I do. And I was kind of chirping back and forth with them because they were pretty close to where our box was. But yeah, and there were some moments in that Cleveland game where it got kind of tense. But when C.J. Procise fumbled, Rabel slammed his hand down on the table. As hard as I've ever seen. Like, he was so mad about that. And it was really funny. It was just something you don't see from Steve. I mean, yeah, he's, you know, just the nicest guy in the world. And, you know, and I would say some of my favorite times with Rabel is when we get into the opposing city, you know, and especially when you go back east, we go on a Friday, and there's always a mad dash for the bar to, you know, before they close, because sometimes we'll get into some of these cities pretty late. But some of my favorite moments have been enjoying a couple pops with Rabel down in the hotel bar and listening to some of the stories from the times when, you know, he played with the Seahawks. And but, you know, for him, you know, he had a choice to make. There was a chance that he was going to make the team. But I can't remember if who it was that told him, but he got some good advice. I can't remember. It was probably somebody at Cairo or something that said, hey, you know, this is a chance for you to get started right away in media. There's not a great chance that he was going to make the team that year. And so he'd had enough. And so he decided to go into the media. And, you know, he started doing sports and things like that. But, you know, and then became, you know, the preeminent anchor in Seattle News. And so one of the things that we did, and we have a clip of this. This came off of my phone. I got it off of a VHS tape that I had. But we did something called the Goofy Games. So it was two anchors. Pipe down there, Sky. I know you're excited about the story time, but
she loves Steve Rabel.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I like to think that she's like cheering me on right now, talking about. Yeah, Rabel here. But yeah, we went to something called the Goofy Games, where it was some charitable thing where people from different cities would come. There'd be two athletes and two anchors. As I mentioned earlier, Mike Iruzioni, the USA hockey team guy, he was there. And so, yeah, there was a lot of, you know, guys from around the Steve DeBerg, I remember being there. But anyway, it was Rabel, a girl named Amy Clancy, which I don't know Amy's name now because she got married. And then it was me and Dave Craig. And so we'd had to do all these goofy things like, you know, I had to give Amy like a piggyback ride and she was, you know, throwing things at targets. There were all these really weird things. Well, one of them was a canoe race and I had to be in the canoe with Dave Craig. And Dave Craig is like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm from Wisconsin, you know, so I know how to steer a canoe. He didn't. He did not know. And we actually ran into the side of the moat that we were in. And then I fell off the seat and got my leg all bloody at the Goofy Games because of Dave Craig, because he doesn't know how to steer a damn canoe.
Stunning.
So, yeah. So anyway, Rabel refers to this in Cut 8 as he's interviewing me. And this is back in like 1991.
You know, we do some events here that aren't exactly like tackling Christian Okoye, the Kansas City Chiefs. Then again, they're not all that easy sometimes, as we saw you slide down into the bottom of the canoe just a couple of minutes ago. You all right?
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that, Steve. I want to say, first I show up and I got to dance the Irish jig, and then I got to run with inner tubes around myself. And then that, I've done a pretty good job of making myself look really stupid.
And that really is the point of these games, though, isn't it? I mean, everybody has a good time, and we're doing it for charity. You get to see a lot of guys here that you compete with on the football field. That part of it, I know, for me, is one of the fun things.
Yeah, it's a blast. Having a great time down here. And we've been sitting around laughing about that canoe ride all day. We're wishing we could get back out there and do it again, though.
Listen how young you guys sound there, man.
There's the beginning of, you know, the team that we would be together, 30 years later almost, doing radio. But, yeah, Rabel has been one of those guys that I just have always got along with and had fun with. I remember coming back from, I think it was Cincinnati in 1989. We went out there and beat them. And, you know, I can't sleep on a plane. And, you know, sometimes I try to distract myself by playing cribbage with Dave Craig or whatever. Everybody was asleep except for me and Rabel. And I swear we talked for 3 hours straight. And this is when I was a player, you know, and he was doing the radio stuff. But, you know, I was going to say, if you go to Seahawks.com, they did a really good job. And there's some pictures down at the bottom. But, yeah, a guy named Nathan Rauschenberg wrote a whole thing. And there's a bunch of pictures. And then there's some of Rabel's calls. And that's the thing about Rabes that, you know, if there was an emergency situation where I had to fill in, I'm not, you know, I don't know how I would do. But Rabel has all of these great quotes, you know, like, remember there was a play with Russell Wilson where he spun around twice and then found Doug Baldwin. And he says, you know, he did more pirouettes than a ballerina. But, you know, and so he has all these really, you know, great things. But as he's calling the game, some of the things you don't even notice, there was an 88-yard run in there from Sean Alexander. And while he's describing it, he says he has a seam to his right, and he does, and he hits it. And so, like, he kind of is predicting things that are going to happen. But speaking of that, one of my favorite quotes was the – or I'm sorry, the calls was the Fail Mary call. And that's cut number six because, you know, he talks about this, but it always reminds me of a certain character in a certain movie.
Wilson takes a snap. Three-man rush. Looking, scrambling. Now he's going to roll. Now he's going to stop and set. Back at the 40, lets it fly to the end zone. Going to give his guys a chance. Going up, coming down. Does he come down with it? Does Golden Tate have it? He's in the end zone. He has. Oh, my God, he's got it. Touchdown, Seahawks. Golden Tate comes down with the ball in the corner of the end zone with no time left on the clock. How did he do it?
A tie goes to the receiver.
Down at the bottom of the pile, and they're still unpiling. Golden Tate has the ball at the bottom of the pile.
My favorite part is all I can hear is Bill Murray. It's in the hole. Yeah, it's in the hole.
The voice crack. It's perfect. Yeah.
So then he has some of the things like the one we must play 50 times a week, cut number five.
Bruce, no.
There we go. That's it.
With a little addition from Sky there.
Yeah, there we go. But yeah, I mean, he has a knack for that. And just there's nobody like Rabel. And I always, you know, I feel like we, you know, maybe we're a little bit myopic on this, you know, as far as who we like. You know, we had Calabro, you know, some of the great announcers here, Dave Niehaus, Rick Riz. I mean, I just feel like we've been blessed that way. But, you know, as far as Rabel goes, I just think he's by far the best in the NFL. But I'll tell you what, he surprised me this year, and Matt was able, or Mora was able to find this this call, cut number seven this year in this last season. It was week 12 in Philadelphia, and Rabel was describing something, and man, it got to me.
Sanders with the play fake, Wentz steps up in the pocket. Now he's going to go down. Ball is on the ground. Seahawks have it. Al Woods fell on it. Check it to see if there's any air left in it. As Wentz standing in the pocket. The ball gets slapped away, and there's Al Woods holding it up for all to see, and listen to the Eagles fans.
He made you laugh on the broadcast.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I just was not expecting that from him. But, yeah, Al Woods, I mean, you've seen Al. I mean, Al's hands look like hams, and, yeah, just a big dude. But, yeah, he's just such a natural at it, and I just love working with him. But I'll tell you what, man, I think a lot of people here in Seattle are going to miss him, but Rabel's an institution, and I'd be glad to continue to work with him on the broadcasts. And, you know, hopefully he's able to do that for a really long time, because I think it would probably take me about 15 years to get to the level that he was in year one.
Yeah. Well, yeah, hopefully we won't have to deal with that. Everybody's comfortable. You'll be comfortable. Rabel will still be there, and the fans just win. He's a great guy. His final day at Cairo 7 will still call the games for your Seattle Seahawks, so he's not going anywhere in that respect. Remember, you now have radios in your homes. If you've got a smart speaker, just tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM, and you've got a radio right there. Hey, would you pay to have a cardboard cutout of yourself at a baseball game? We'll explain that further when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
The San Francisco Giants let their season ticket holders know on Thursday that they will play without fans due to the coronavirus, but the team will allow season ticket holders to send in an image of themselves to be placed onto a cutout that will be displayed in the stands during home games. If you're not a season ticket holder, you can still have your very own cutout placed, quote, as close to the season ticket holder seats as possible for $99.
So you're paying for a ticket to have an image of yourself, have a great seat for the game, and maybe you'll see it on TV, I guess. It's a creative way to generate some level of revenue. I mean, it's, you know, that's an expensive ticket, $100 for a game. And, hey, there's a picture of me. There's a cutout of me right there. You don't really get the enjoyment of sitting in the stands and experience it firsthand, but kind of an interesting idea.
This is really funny. I love this idea. It's very clever. You know what a bunch of people should do is buy up tickets at Houston Astros games and then send in pictures of people booing.
Yeah.
You know, like, boo, like with angry faces. With
or pictures of garbage
over,
cans.
Cupped over there. Yeah, there you go. That way you can still make your commentary on the Houston Astros for cheating because they were all complicit.
That's right, Dave.
Is that right, Bob?
I think that's exactly right, and Alex Cora agrees with us.
Do you guys think it's $99 a game or just a one-time fee?
I don't know.
Per game.
Oh, is everything okay back there?
What are you doing to that poor dog?
Jeez.
Well, River decided to come down, and I gave each one of them a treat, and, yeah, River went after Sky's treat, and, yeah, they had a little flare-up there.
Wow. That doesn't seem like a fair fight.
Well, no, he just lets her. I mean, he's actually getting along with her pretty well now, but there are times when he doesn't want to be bothered. And then around food, she doesn't quite get that yet. Yeah. And I mean, I'm trying to multitask here because my wife and kids are over in Ellensburg. They're playing a game right now. And so I'm trying to take care of two dogs and a puppy, you know, while we're doing this. So sorry about that.
Yeah, everybody okay? No, nobody got bitten, right?
She's under my feet right now, though, because she's
she's scared.
Yes, she is.
Well, what about when in the email last night, and I know it was kind of goofy, but for Mariners could do it for Bark at the Park, and we could have cutout pictures of our dogs there in the stands. How about that?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I think they should do that. Yeah, the Mariners, what they've been doing, what, three or four of those a year now, and people really enjoy it. But, yeah, it'd be fun to see dogs out there.
How about Anthony Gordon going to the Seattle Seahawks, the third-string quarterback behind Russell Wilson? But he'll have an opportunity to play. And because Garner Minshew had so much success being able to really jump out of that Mike Leach system to being able to play the game as a starter, I think people are hoping that Anthony Gordon can develop in that fashion. He has some talent, played well at the Senior Bowl. I think he has a chance to end up being good.
Now, did he say he has a chance to play? I didn't quite catch in the beginning because
he said he has a chance to go to the Hall of Fame in Canton.
Yeah, I missed that part, but yeah, just sure just enough. To play. I mean, even is that's almost as unrealistic as him going to the Hall of Fame, just him playing at all behind one of the most durable quarterbacks certainly this franchise has ever seen in Russell Wilson, who never misses a snap. Doesn't mean he won't get hurt at some point, but I wouldn't bet. If you're betting on does Anthony Gordon take a snap this year, I don't know what the over-under on that would be. Two snaps, I would take the under.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that now all of a sudden, you know, people are talking about Washington State quarterbacks because, you know, the whole thing was that, you know, quarterbacks that come out of that, you know, system, the air raid, haven't done well in the NFL, and Gardner Minshew did pretty well. So now all of a sudden, you know, that it's just funny how long it takes a story to turn around because it was that, yeah, they don't make it because they're system quarterbacks coming out of college. And now all of a sudden we're talking about Anthony Gordon. Wow. I mean, that's pretty amazing. I would love to see him. I mean, I like Geno Smith just fine, but I would love to see him make the team, to be good enough to make the team, because, you know, if you have a good backup quarterback that you can, you know, develop and make into a good player like Jacoby Brissett, you know, then, and, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, then you might have a valuable trade asset down the road.
Well, and I think we know what Geno Smith's ceiling is, and we don't know what Anthony Gordon's is. So that's kind of – and plus, he's a Coug. Of course, I'm going to be rooting for him. But still, I like the idea of Anthony Gordon being the backup quarterback. And I know a lot of people wouldn't, because you don't want a rookie. You want a veteran out there, and you have that in Geno Smith. But, if Geno Smith is out there, you're not looking at anything better than a 9-7 season if Russell does get hurt. And maybe it'd be worse with Gordon, but I'm with you on that. Let's see if he can develop. And Bucky Brooks, man, he's got the hot takes today, doesn't he? Saying Antonio Brown would be a great fit with the Seahawks, and he thinks that Anthony Gordon is going to be a good player too.
Skip, I got a text here on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line that I have to ask you. I'm not sure where this came from, but I don't think it did, but
it's anonymous.
It could have.
I mean, we don't know.
It says that, hey, due to the uniqueness of the situation, you mentioned players like Cal Raleigh, and he's had, boy howdy, he's had success with guys like Mike Zunino in the past. He's willing to lend his services on the taxi squad coaching staff if you need some help.
What do you think, Skip?
No chance would I let boy howdy get close to any of our guys.
What?
I can't, you know, he wants to take all the credit for what turning, you know, Mike Zunino around there for a while. And certainly, we have to give credit where it's due. I don't know how much of an impact Boy Howdy made, but Zunino certainly had a couple good years in there. So, we'll take a first crack at our guys. I will keep Boy Howdy on speed dial just in case. I need him to come in and give some inspiring fire up speech to our club or whatever. But I think we can handle it. So you can let him know for me.
Well, that was nice of Scott Servais to play along with that nonsense. Boy, howdy, fixing Zunino. He's so fixed, he got shipped off to Tampa Bay, where he still can't hit. And I love Mike Zunino, but come on now.
Can you imagine Boy Howdy giving a fired-up speech to the team?
No.
Can you picture? James is always, like, very relaxed and doesn't say a lot and kind of sits in his chair. You know, just I've never seen Boy Howdy fired up. I'd like to see that.
I like that relationship they have. I think it's kind of fun that Servais entertains the idea of Boy Howdy even. You know, so it's kind of cool, the back and forth. I've heard those guys before in interviews. And, Servais, he's a good egg, as my mom would probably say or someone else would say. I love Scott Servais.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Servais too, man. I'm rooting for him. And, yeah, maybe a little pressure off this year, 60-game season, young team, so can relax and hopefully just enjoy some baseball. Coming up, we couldn't let the week end without talking some football with a show favorite, everybody's favorite, Paul Moyer. He's going to join us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.